it's old snow.
Well, my clock says it's 3 o'clock. So I'm going to get us going here, as I know we all have schedules. And so I'm going to call the meeting to order, and I'd like to call the March 9th Budget and Finance Commission special meeting to order. It is now 3 p.m. I thank everyone for taking the time to join us this afternoon, and especially since this is an abnormal time and date for us. So thanks to all of my colleagues for being able to make it. The meeting is taking place online, just so we have that in the minutes to comply with ongoing social distancing and ensure the community's ability to participate. And, this might be coming to an end eventually, I think. Maybe we'll have an in-person meeting before our terms are up in 16 years. No, it's not 16, it's two. So anyway, we'll see. What I'd like to do is ask Ms. Cody to take roll call here for us.
Okay, Commissioner Beasley?
Here.
Commissioner Mason? Commissioner Newell?
Here.
Vice Chair Salverson?
Present.
Chair Latchford?
Here.
Thank you.
All righty. And I believe we have four, so we have a quorum. And so we will go ahead and proceed. I'd like to start off by leading you in the Pledge of Allegiance, if you would please speak along with me. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. All right, thank you, everyone. Well, welcome again. Thank you for everyone. And we have a special meeting here, and we have some guests with us, which we'll introduce to you later on in the agenda here, which won't be that long. But I wanted to get some comments out and some instructions in case we do have anybody in the audience regarding what we're doing here. I think most people have become accustomed to the fact that the town regularly holds its meetings with Zoom. And I think most of us now, after a year under the pandemic, have come to consider myself to be an expert. Yes, me, I have a duty. In order to conduct a seamless meeting, we'd like to have all questions and comments held until after the presentation is done. I haven't seen the presentation, but I would like to have the opportunity for the presenters to get their presentation out. They'll probably answer a lot of the questions that we have. So if everyone could just hold, and then at the end of their presentation, we'll open up questions and everything to the commissioners. It's also my intent, if need be, to open up the floor to anybody in the audience who might like to make a comment or ask a question on the presentation, although there is no requirement to provide answers at this point because I'm not sure we really have them. But we will get that opportunity when the time comes in the agenda here. If the public wishes to address the commission on any item or on this agenda, which is just the one item we had before us, or during the call to audience, we ask that you please raise your hand, and you will do this through Zoom. When I first heard about this, I was waving my hand like crazy, and nobody was recognizing me, so now I've learned how to raise my hand in Zoom. So for those who are participating on any other item platform than by phone, you'll find and select the participant icon at the bottom center of your page. This will open a dialog box that lists all the participants in the meeting. Scroll down until you find your name and select your name. Once your name is selected, a second box will pop up where you'll have the option to raise your hand. And I think most of you know how to do that. Now, this is just for those folks who are in the audience, if we have any. Actually, for those who might be participating by phone, It's, it actually sounds a little easier, but anyway, press star 9 to raise your hand and press star 6 to mute your microphone. Please wait until you raise your hand until the appropriate agenda item has been announced, which again, tonight, we only have one agenda item. I'll announce the opportunity to raise your hand when the time comes. Our aim is to proceed in a timely and efficient manner, as we have a number of guests here today. Once your hand is raised, I will ask Ms. Cody to unmute your microphone. So please raise your hand if you have a question or comment after I announce the appropriate time for you to do so. Please make sure, this is one that always catches me, but please make sure you are not also muted on your personal device. As with all commission meetings, please, if you do ask a question or make a comment, please clearly state your name and whether or not you are an Oro Valley resident. Speakers are limited to no more than 3 minutes, and we ask that you respect the 3 minute time limit. So just a little primer, if need be. Again, we're welcoming everybody here, and we're going to move on into the agenda. And at this point, we're going to go to call to the audience. And at this time, let me ask Ms. Cody, do we have any blue cards that have been submitted from the audience or any of our residents?
There are no speakers, Mr. Chair.
We do not have any?
No, none.
All right. Do we have anybody in the audience who has raised their hand to speak?
No, we do not.
Okay. So I won't go through all of the instructions for call to audience. At this time, what we'll do is we'll close the audience as there's been no requests. And we will move on to the next item on the agenda. And that will be the staff liaison report. I'm going to turn the floor over to Mr. Gephardt, if he wouldn't mind proceeding, please.
Need to unmute.
Sorry about that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the not much to report for you this evening. I guess really the one thing I did want to highlight, we are staff is busy, as you're probably well aware, in the budget season. We've been holding a number of departmental meetings last week and this week. Tentatively, I guess, on the schedule, the budget calendar, we hope to present the town manager's recommended budget to you all for your review on April 20th is what our schedule is for the town manager's recommended budget. So like I said, not a whole lot to report, but just wanted to get that on, highlight that for you this evening and let you know that staff is busy trying to put together the pieces to the budget so that we can present that both to the council and to the Budget and Finance Commission in due course. So with that, I think we can move on to the regular session agenda. Thank you.
Real quick, Mr. Gephardt, the receipt of the recommended budget will be on April 20th?
Correct.
All right, so that's when we will receive it.
Yeah, I believe, let me look at the calendar here. I believe it's scheduled to go to council or be distributed to council April 14th. So April 14th, it'll be distributed to council and the BFC. So you'll actually get it prior to your Tuesday, April 20th meeting. It'll be April 14th.
Okay, I got you. So and then on April 20th is our regular commission meeting. At that time, we'll have discussion and review.
That's correct, sir.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. All right, I think we'll move into the regular agenda now for the commission, and we're going to proceed to number one. Allison, would you be so kind as to read number one into the record?
Sure. Agenda item one, review and approval of the February 16, 2021 regular session meeting minutes.
Okay, are there any questions or comments from commission members regarding the draft that we received in our packet? All right, if not, hearing none, if I can have a motion to accept the minutes.
So moved.
And a second?
Second.
All right, let the minutes reflect that Commissioner Beasley approved and Vice Chair Salveson seconded. All those in favor? Say aye.
Aye. Aye.
No nays are noted. So the minutes pass. Next, we're going to move on to item number two, which is the meat of our agenda. And Allison, again, be so kind as to read item two into the
agenda. Item two, presentation and possible discussion on PSPRS liability funding options and related policy.
All right, thank you very much, Allison. All right, I'm going to turn this over to Mr. Gephardt. Actually, I would ask that Mr. Gephardt take the time to introduce the guests that we have here, the consultants. Might give us a little background about their firm, which they may do themselves, but it'd be useful to the commissioners to learn a little bit about CBIZ and the team that's been put together to work on this. So I'm going to turn the floor over to you, Mr. Gephardt, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, once again, Commission. So this item, obviously, we hope to have some discussion and healthy dialogue regarding our PSPRS liability and the proposed funding strategies, options that our consultants will provide to you this evening. Our consultants are, their firm is CBIZ. Bill Siegenthaler is the principal that we've been working with from CBIZ, but he's also got a team assembled. Tom Menny is on our call this afternoon, as is Hugh Blaxall. And so so with that, I'll turn the floor over to Bill to introduce himself. And maybe, as you said, Mr. Chair, discuss his firm and their expertise a little bit, and then we'll hopefully get into the presentation. So.
Thank you, Dave. My name is Bill Siegenthaler, as Dave mentioned, and the team that we have representing CBIZ on this call today, and have been the alternatives that we're presenting is Hugh Blaxall, Tom Menny, and myself. And we are part of the credit risk practice of CBIZ. CBIZ is a national accounting and consulting firm with offices across the country. And within the firm, we have a credit risk practice, which is houses today, and in particular, Tom Menny and Hugh Blaxall specialize in the development of models and model validation. And work together to develop the alternatives which we plan to discuss today. Dave, would you go into the presentation at this time?
Yeah, Bill, either you can share your screen or I can share mine. I've got the presentation up, so either way, it doesn't matter to me.
All right. I have it up as well. Let me see if I'm able to share, and if that doesn't work, we'll let you share. So bear with me just a second. Can everyone see the presentation on their screen?
Yes, I can.
Uh-huh. Okay. All right. Very good. I will go through it, and I'm going to go through it, and certainly let me know if we have any questions, and Tom and you will comment as appropriate, but you know, we want to give you a high level view of the alternatives we're currently discussing. And I should position this, the original engagement was for us to develop five alternatives, which we discussed with Dave and determined that there were, that these five were probably the most appropriate alternatives. We've considered a number of different alternatives beyond the five. We're actually showing you six today, but the plan will be ultimately to come up with a shorter list of recommendations at our next meeting. And then ultimately, we will make a specific recommendation for the alternative that we believe from a financial perspective is most advantageous for the town of Oro Valley. So that's kind of where we are in the process today. The six options, which I just mentioned, are listed on the screen in front of you now. I'm just going to repeat them briefly. The baseline minimum contribution is simply making the minimum contribution required each year to the PSPRS plan as, you know, the absolute minimum requirement. And then based on that minimum, we've looked at, and we are presenting today, five other options. The option two would be that baseline minimum payment plus making an additional $2.5 million additional contribution as another possible alternative. The third alternative would be the baseline plus a significant one-time contribution of $10 million plus an additional $1.5 million contribution each year. The fourth alternative is the baseline plus a significant contribution of $15 million and a $1 million additional contribution each year. And then options five and six are two debt issuances that we're presenting as well, one at the $24 million level and the other at the $40 million level. And just to be clear, none of these numbers are cast in stone. They're the result of some initial modeling and discussions that we've had with Dave and with Mary over the past several weeks. And as I mentioned, we'll continue to refine these alternatives and reduce them to five or less before we ultimately perform a net present value analysis of the remaining alternatives. And then we will make a specific recommendation based on that analysis. So that's that'll take place over the next several weeks.
I'd like a clarification on something from that first slide. Sorry to cut you off, if you could go back for a second. Plus 2.5 million additional contribution, and then 1.5 million additional contribution, and 1 million additional contribution, that's intended to be a yearly contribution. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Could we make sure that
are yearly? Yes.
Yeah. Could we make sure that we're differentiating between one-time payments and yearly payments moving forward?
Clarification.
Thank you.
So I'm just briefly going to go through the six alternatives. Again, stop me with any questions that you might have or any comments. And I'll ask Tom and you if there's any important issues that I fail to mention, certainly feel free to jump in. And certainly when we get through the six, you know, we'll have additional discussion and questions overall as kind of where we are and, you know, what the next steps are. So in terms of option one, the baseline minimum contribution, this is simply saying Each year you will make the minimum contribution required by the state to the plan. If this were to continue based on the analysis that we've done, and we've provided in an Excel format detailed analysis to Dave and his team, you know, showing the specific results. But for discussion purposes, we're summarizing that here in this presentation. But we certainly refer to the underlying detail if there are any questions regarding that. So making the minimum contribution by the end of 2036, which is the projection period that we considered for our analysis, only 55% of the unfunded liability would be covered by the year 2036 if you continued making simply the minimum contribution. The pros of this alternative would be that you're minimizing your annual cash flow in early years, but obviously, since you're only at 55% in year 2036, the cons of this is larger contributions would be required in those later years. And at a 55% funding level, you would be under your current policy guideline of 70%. So there are the cons to that particular alternative.
If I can just jump in there, Bill, on this, just to provide clarification for the commission, the numbers that we utilize for the minimum, the ARC, the minimum required contribution, includes the projected amortization of our unfunded liability. So basically what we're discussing here is, and so the question is, well, why is it 55%? The difference is that under the projections from the plan, they're obviously projecting 7.3% earnings on our investments. And under our assumptions, we're projecting 5.3%. And so that's really what the difference is there. We're trying to be obviously very conservative with the earnings forecast, the return on the investments that the plan provides, the yield. And so they're more optimistic in those projections, and we're trying to be, I guess, more pessimistic or more realistic, I guess, however you want to look at that. But under their forecast, we would get 100% funded, and under the consultant's forecast, obviously under our internal forecast, we're only 55% funded.
David, is that percentage to be used for each of those six scenarios, the same percentage, the 5.3?
Yeah, it is. And I think we may, you know, we can, the consultants can actually obviously run those forecasts and scenarios with a different earnings assumption, but I feel 5.3, given, you know, where the plan has been historically is certainly more realistic than the 7.3. Especially moving forward and where we've been, you know, from an economical standpoint, et cetera. So 5.3 is utilized across all of the scenarios that will be presented this evening.
Okay. I would suggest adding that into the chart maybe as well.
Okay. Well, we can do that. Okay. The second alternative is, again, the same baseline scenario, making the minimum payment each year, but plus similar to what the town has done over the past couple of years, is make an additional contribution. In this particular alternative, we're assuming that additional contribution would be $2.5 million. And the reason we're looking at $2.5 million as a possible additional contribution is that if you can look at the second bullet, by making this additional contribution with the same earnings assumption as alternative one, you're fully funded in 2036. So that's kind of where the 2.5 million number came, as opposed to a lower number or a higher number. The pros of that obviously are by making an additional contribution in the early years, you're reducing the outflow requirements in later years. You're meeting your pension policy guidelines, which the guideline, you know, is planned to be 100% by 2036. And the cons of this approach are the fact that you're making an additional annual contribution every year, including the early years, your cash outflow is going to increase in those early years, but the benefit you get is being fully funded. So that's alternative two.
So back to that for a quick second. So you took 2036 as we want to be fully funded and sort of backed into what is it going to take every year to get there? Is that sort of the process for that one?
Through an iterative process in the model, yes.
Okay, got it. Thanks.
That's how we got there. So that's again where that magic number of 2.5 million comes from, you know, again, based on these assumptions, which were provided to us by the tail. Alternative three, in this case, again, we're taking the baseline contribution plus a significant one-time contribution of $10 million, and then a annual additional contribution of $1.5 million. And this approach, it gets you essentially 100% funded. It works out to be, you know, roughly 90%, but roughly at 2036, you're fully funded. The pros of this alternative are it reduces the cash outflow in later years because you've made a significant contribution in year one and are making additional contributions each year. You're also meeting, effectively, you're meeting your pension fund guidelines being at 99% plus in 2036. The con of this is by making a large initial contribution of 10 million, you're significantly increasing your cash outflow in the early years between that contribution and the additional contribution that you're making. But
I have a question. So if we were to implement this for our next fiscal year, we would have a $10 million payment in the first year, and then in future budgets of 1.5 million ongoing expense, or
yes,
we would also have a 1.5 million expense in the first year of implementing this policy.
Well, also in the first year and then every year thereafter.
Okay, so it would be 11.5 in the first year and then 1.5 moving forward. Okay.
That's correct. And we, you know, we realize, you know, because of the magnitude of some of these contributions, you know, they may not be attractive, but we're kind of presenting this just to kind of give you the different ways you can get to 100% funding, which is the ultimate objective. Alternative four is very similar to three. In this case, we looked at a significant contribution in year one of 15 million and then an annual contribution a little bit less of 1.1 million. That also gets you effectively to 100% funding. Again, it's 99% plus in 2036. The pros and cons of that are, you know, exactly the same as the prior one, because you're making a significant upfront contribution. So, the negative to that obviously is that you're increasing your cash flow in the early years, but you're realizing reduced cash flow in later years, and you're also achieving effectively 100% funding. So it's basically the same as number three with slightly different numbers. Five and six options are debt issuances, which obviously, is something that's with low interest rates has become very popular as a way to finance unfunded pension liabilities. So we looked at two levels that we thought, based on, again, with discussions with Dave and Mary that we felt were probably most reflective of the approaches that the town might consider if it were considering a debt issuance. The first one is $24 million. This results, again, using the same assumptions as is in the prior options and the baseline assumption, an unfunded liability at the end of 64%. The pros of this approach, obviously, are you're reducing your outflow in early years because you're issuing debt and have that debt as a source of funds. But the con is that you're increasing your outflow in later years because you're not achieving full funding by 2036 like the other options. And you're not meeting your policy guidelines.
Can I ask a quick question? Does this then assume that the annual funding level is done purely at the actuary's assumption?
Could you repeat that again for me?
Does this make the assumption then that you do a lump sum deposit of $24 million and then purely follow the actuary's requirement for annual funding?
Yes. Yes, okay. That's correct. And option six, which again—
Let me jump in there, Bill. Jim, actually, under this scenario, if you look at the contributions under this scenario, they are no different than the baseline.
Yeah, so that's the assumption I was making.
There's no difference in this scenario in the ARC versus the baseline scenario. So we would not dial back. This scenario doesn't propose dialing back the contributions down to what the actuaries may calculate on behalf of the plan.
Okay. And option six, again, is just different numbers, but the same case as option five. In this case, a larger debt issuance. And what this does, it does improve the amount of coverage of the unfunded liability up to 73%, but it's still not fully funding. Same pros and cons as option five, and does not achieve your objective of 100% funding by 2036. So
what amount of debt funding is necessary to achieve 100% by 2036? What's that back into number?
We did not consider a larger debt issuance of larger than $40 million. Our belief is that, and Tom, feel free to jump in. We did very quickly look at some larger numbers, and quite frankly, they did not get you significant improvements in the level of funding relative to the amount of the issuance of debt. So again, based on the earnings assumptions and the other assumptions that we're making and the projections that were provided to us by the town, it looks like the issuance of debt is a difficult way to achieve the 100% funding, to boil it down to its essence.
Because Bill, what we found is that you would need, based on this assumption set, close to 70, maybe 72 million. Now, there's two questions here. One is the amount, the other is the structure. Now, we ran a lot of different scenarios early on with basic, more like traditional municipal financing structure as opposed to fully amortizing. And you still have your pension liability, which you're going to pay over time, but then you've also got to pay back the debt over time.
Right.
So some of the early scenarios we ran had the debt maturing beyond basically the scope of this analysis, but it's still going to have to get paid back at some point. So you're just getting a spread. Maybe the cost of the debt is just under 3%. The investment earnings are 5.3. So you're getting that spread, but that spread also has to pay back the principal. So it it becomes, using those assumptions becomes a less attractive option.
Yeah. Does that debt issuance need to be voter approved or not?
Yeah, Commissioner Salverson, it would not need to be voter approved. There's a couple different options there, whether it's an excise tax bond, which is pretty typical what you see, or a certificate of participation, which is basically a lease back transaction for the town, where the town would deed over assets and then lease them back from the debt provider. So there's a couple different structures that you're seeing in Arizona and probably elsewhere. I don't know which one is preferable. To me, it's 6-1, half dozen the other. We'd probably go with an excise tax just because it's pretty standard. Mm-hmm. And I don't typically like to deed over town-owned assets and try to lease them back. To me, that's kind of a game. We could look at that, and that's not really my call. We would certainly present both options to town council and see which option was preferable to them.
So just to summarize kind of where we are at this point is, based on any feedback that we receive from the Budget Finance Commission and continuing discussions with Dave and Mary and their team, we will continue to refine these options, reduce the options to 5 or less, and then perform a net present value analysis on all the options, as well as stress test the debt options, just to address any concerns that would a higher earnings rate make the debt issuances dramatically more attractive. We don't believe so, but we will present, those analyses just so you have the full range of information in comparing the debt alternatives versus the non-debt alternatives.
Well, I guess, Tom, let me kind of recap. Let me take a step back here from the very beginning. It looks like what we really are looking at from your analysis is that there's two options, really just two options. One is to pay down by cash and the other is by debt. I know that sounds simplistic, but that's kind of where it looks like we're coming out. The cash is going to be based upon how much we're willing to give up now. So your net present value study will most likely be pretty significant as to what that contribution should be. And again, I don't know what your discount rate is, but that's probably going to have a real impact there. The debt, when you're looking at investment returns of 5.3% as compared to a cost of 3% for the debt, just from that very significant statement, I don't know how you'll ever get to the point of fully funding the liability without really pushing out the term of the debt significantly. I know that our colleagues down the street in Tucson went through a pretty significant transaction here recently. I don't know if I have all the details, but apparently their investment return, they decided to use the same investment return that they're getting through or should be getting through PSPRS, and that's 7.3%. I think their term is going out 20 years. So there's a little guideline there. Of course, there's a little bit more complicated, but it seems to me that if we're going to, again, I don't know this to be the case because I haven't run the numbers, but if we're going to keep the investment returns at 5.3% and the cost at 3%, which, by the way, may not be the cost as we go home tonight with everything that's going on, we're probably very difficult to get to a close unfunded liability with debt. Am I jumping out too far or?
No, John, I think you fit the nail on the head. With these assumptions, it's to all of our surprises, you know, in terms of our initial prejudices before we start this analysis, you know, we thought debt would potentially be an attractive option, one of several options. But when we really got into it and looked at the, you know, using the projections provided from the town and determined through your GASB 68 statements, you know, your unfunded liability is growing at a very significant rate. And that seems to trump all other spreads that you might realize through a debt issuance. I mean, oversimplifying it, but we think you're exactly correct in looking at this. We will stress test the one or two debt issuance options we consider and look at them at a 7.3 earnings rate to see how much that impacts it. But as Tom mentioned before, it really looked like we had to substantially increase the amount of the debt to take advantage of that spread between the earnings rate and the cost of 2.75% or 3% to make the debt issuance make any sense. So I think your analysis is right on target.
Yeah, I have a couple of comments here, and obviously, whatever council proposes moving forward as to set the policy, that policy is going to be enacted for 1 year. Due to state law, that policy is going to be reviewed and repassed, and a council cannot bind a future council to policy with policy. So I definitely think that when we think about cons with 2, 3, and 4, we have to understand that there's no guarantee that that next yearly additional contribution is going to be made by a future council, which may or may not constitute the same people who are on council now, especially if we're dealing 14 to 15 years in the future. Pity the poor soul who wants to be on the city council for 15 straight years. So I definitely think that has to be considered as a risk. I'd also be interested in some hybrid models, looking at that baseline of plus a significant contribution of 15 million, adding a debt issuance on top of that, and seeing if that 1 million additional contribution can be reduced to something smaller. On top of that, I know that the council seems to be capable in its current form to holding a $500,000 additional contribution. I'd like to know if we could get what kind of debt issuance would needed to hit that to 500,000 or even to zero on top of that. And the final question I have is a question back to David regarding the statute. I know that Oro Valley has chosen to have the debt 100% funded by 2036. Cities have the option of being 100% funded, getting to 100% funding at 2046. But just because we got to 100% funding at 2036 wouldn't remove our obligation to also be 100% funded at 2046, correct?
Yeah, Commissioner Newell, members of the commission, that's absolutely correct. I think once we get to 2036, obviously that's the target to be 100% funded. It will be interesting. Like I don't see this pension policy, requirement, this annual review and posting of the PSPRS pension policy. I don't see that requirement going away after 2036. I see it continuing on. And I think it'll be up to the councils in future years past 2036 to update that policy and try to continue to hit that 100% benchmark. But that'll be up to obviously future councils to decide that. But I could see that being a very, very likely scenario.
I do think that this is a unique opportunity where we've been given council direction to propose a solution. And part of that solution should include, once we get to that 100% by 2036, this is going to be the estimated amount of additional contribution we would need to keep plugging at it from 2036 to 2046 to keep up with the statutory requirements to hold it at 100%. Unless it was our desire to be over 100% at 2036, knowing that it would then fall back to, you know, our funding level would drift back to 100% by 2046. And that would be a council leveled decision if that was, you know, but specifically, I think we need to indicate that long-term, yes, this would be a solution to 2036. And then we also need to think about, this is how we would anticipate holding it there at 2046.
Yeah, Commissioner Newell, I'll just jump in there. That 2046 date really doesn't have any significance to the town. It has significance to the city because the city's chosen to amortize their unfunded actuarial liability. They chose the 30-year period for budgetary reasons, I'm assuming, you know, just because that was more palatable to them. It didn't have as big of a budget impact on a year-to-year basis. But, you know, from the town standpoint, we've continued, and that's why that 2036 date is significant to the town, is because we chose not to stretch out that 30-year, stretch out the amortization of the unfunded liability to 30 years. We chose to keep it at 20 years and to try to manage that, which obviously is beneficial to the town, should be beneficial to the town over time, versus what the city or other local governments have chosen to do when they chose to extend that amortization. Because that amortization, obviously, the longer you extend it, I mean, you eventually have to pay it at some point. The longer you extend it, the more you end up paying over time. So.
I guess the other piece that I think we would need to look at would be maybe a David Mary question is affordability. The options 3 and 4, is that doable? Given what our budgets are shaping up to look like.
Yeah, Commissioner Salverson, Vice Chair Salverson, members of the commission, I think they are doable. Number 4 is going to be a challenge. I mean, that really digs into our reserves pretty significantly. But with that said, I think it is a possibility. That'll be up to the council to decide. But I think 3 and 4 are possible. 3 is definitely more possible than 4. 4 is. It stretches us a bit, but with that said, I think both of them should be on the table. And I agree with Commissioner Newell regarding looking at a structure that includes a potentially smaller or roughly the same debt issuance with a significant contribution up front, and then whatever that annual contribution is over time. I think that option needs to be on the table as well. I think we need to look at the numbers on that and see how that pencils out as well.
And if I may, Mr. Chairman, just add, technically anything is doable, and Dave is right as our CFO that we could make adjustments, but Dave doesn't have the departments pinging at him about why are you going to do this versus that and that kind of thing. And so, this is certainly an additional increasing our $500,000 a year is certainly doable if we can continue to see our budget grow. One of the things that came up in our town council retreat a few weeks ago was we began talking about build out, right? And build out has implications for us for our long-term funding if we're not able to see our population grow. And so a lot of this is related to whether or not the town can continue to grow, we're successful in annexations, and we see additional revenues coming into the town as we begin to chip away at the remaining lots left in town as far as build out. And we're hoping to do a build out analysis here over the next year to 18 months to give us those that direction in terms of what that will look like. But, you know, certainly there is a possibility, and perhaps one, you know, an additional one, and I believe Commissioner Newell mentioned this one as well, is, you know, a significant cash contribution, some amount of borrowing, and then maybe sticking with where we can, that $500,000 or maybe slightly more a year. I think that probably, in my view, is the most realistic option. You know, one of the things that we were just notified of this week, again, if it passes, which we all assume will pass, is that the town will be eligible for receipt of up to $11 million in stimulus funding from the federal government if this passes. Now, it specifically cannot be used for pension pay down, but what it does is it frees up dollars that we would otherwise be spending on capital and that kind of thing. And so that might give us an opportunity to consider, you know, we're doing our budget here at year end, we've had some healthy year end overages, fund balances in terms of lower expenditures and higher revenues because we're so conservative, and that's given us an opportunity, you know, to look at additional capital spending, or in this case, investments. That's, you know, looking at these types of investments that help the town out in the long run. You know, and maybe what we need we need to say, for example, we need a full 20 years from now, from today, and take it out just slightly past 2036 to give us a reasonable amount of time to do that. That certainly is within a policy direction, but that's why your input is so important in the development of these scenarios, because it is about what is financially doable and what are the impacts to the organization and to where we would otherwise be making those investments in the community, while still needing to address something that is our obligation. It's absolutely our obligation. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I have a couple of questions.
Let me just, Jim, right, you want to go ahead? Go.
What liabilities and assets were used in this analysis? Are you using current market value of assets? And what liability assumptions are being made?
What we did is we started with the most recent financial statement, as well as the GSB 68 statements, and used those numbers as our starting point.
Okay, so you did not use current market value of assets, and you did not make any changes to the liability numbers based on what might be more realistic interest rate assumptions.
That's correct.
Couple of questions on my part. Just a minor little question. The debt issuance for your two examples, what was the term used in that? Is it 15 years or?
We assumed 20 years. That seems to be a typical term that's being used by other municipalities in the state.
And a fully amortized in 20 years.
Fully amortized. Yes. Taxable and callable?
We did not account for any call provisions, but all pension obligation bonds are taxable.
As well, yeah. So back to the significant contributions, I first of all, let me say, I think I agree with Commissioner Noel that looking at a hybrid is an appropriate way to look, and I sort of support that. I don't know whether that's a viable alternative. I'm just saying it's worth looking at as an alternative, but probably, again, back to a question to Mary and David. All of three and four, which requires significant contribution up front, sort of similar in character to the debt issuance, is if you look at it just beyond the finance, and that is as the managers of the town and everything, you're going to be giving up a lot of flexibility by paying that money out to begin. You are actually going to have $10 million or $15 million that you're putting out today. And you're not, I don't know that we have a full handle on what the liabilities will be in 20 years. I mean, it very well could be significantly different than what we have today. Good or bad, I don't know. I have no. But I'm just seeing all the, I guess I'm a little nervous inside, $15 million out of the bank, and that's really going to reduce my flexibility for what may come. I don't know what may come. I don't know. So it gives me a bit of a pause. But you get the same thing with the debt issuance, because once you have debt issuance, you are going to have to pay that. Right at the moment now, you can make that determination whenever you want. I want to pay this liability today. I don't want to pay 550. I want to pay 1.5 million or whatever. You can do that every year. It's just your decision to do that and to put it forward, and the council can say yay or nay, but you've got that flexibility. I know what's going on. But to say I'm going to put $15 million or I'm going to pay out a $24 million debt issuance really makes you very inflexible for future decisions. That's not a financial analysis, by the way, so I want you to be careful about that. But you know, it is something to give some consideration to from both your perspective as well as the council's, I think.
You know, John, I do think that's something to think about. There are always opportunity costs when you spend money. Specifically, you know, I'm concerned that when we think about a political analysis, we have not only our history, but every other municipality's history to look at. And the history in the past decisions have shown that rather than pay off pension debt and do things that are in the best use of the financial state of the political body that they're, or the municipal body that they're dealing with, these cans are kicked down the road and allowed to spiral out of control. That's not just here in Oral Valley or Arizona, but nationwide. I think we have a unique opportunity here to take advantage of some opportunities and political will to make a decision that will set our community off in a much more better space for decades moving forward, if the political will is there. To make a one-time hard decision to free up future generations of Oral Valley to bear the fruit of those types of tough calls and wise decisions. Specifically, we are blessed with very conservative budgeting. We have a substantial amount in our savings at this point in our funds. And I don't think I want to take our dollars lower than our target funds of 25%. However, we have to remember that savings can only grow us. We can only save that at a specific rate of 1% that we know that we're limited by statute from the type of assets we're allowed to hold. And we know that this debt is growing at a much higher rate than that is. And it at some point, it makes sense knowing that, every dollar we save more than our savings and more than the specific capital needs of the community in a given year, holding past that 25% doesn't make any sense, knowing that pension debt is growing faster than the legal limits that we can invest those funds in.
Yeah, I don't think I, David, I don't think I can argue with you on that. I recognize that the council is willing to put this forward and show it as a priority of what they want to do. We have a policy in place, absolutely. I'm just saying, add to all of those elements that you just recited, the fact that we do have to look at the inflexibility that will be built into the town for a while of putting this amount of money in. That's And so I certainly agree with your viewpoints. I think they're very well taken.
I guess I think if you don't do something like a 3 or 4, maybe not quite to that level, it's spiraling out of control and you just can't catch up. I think that's what we've seen, this whole debt situation. And if we are in a position, as far as affordability goes, to be able to make a little bit of headway on that big number, we'll benefit from the time value of money, we'll benefit from the ability to really have a catch up. And then in the future, since it is year to year with the additional contribution, if there's a year that it is unaffordable, they can, whoever is the council at that point, can make decisions at that point. But if you've got a big chunk of it paid, I think that almost gives you more flexibility in the future. If you don't do that, you're really stuck. I mean, you have to do at least 2.5 million a year in order to get there. If you don't do that, then it's even a larger obligation the closer you are to the finish line. So I guess I look at the affordability piece, and if what I'm hearing Mary say is, yeah, there's a way of making this work, maybe it's not this full 15 million, maybe it's, to David's point, 10 million and some debt, some combination, but at least we start seriously chiseling away at it instead of watching it grow.
I think the other trick is that once you have done one of these things, you have to maintain the discipline to keep that thing fully funded, rolling forward. Otherwise, it's going to spiral out of control again, because you can't earn your way out of this deficit.
Could I ask a question?
Oh, yes. Hey, Mike, how are you?
I apologize.
Commissioner Mason has now joined us. I wasn't aware of that. Sorry about that. Yes, go ahead, Commissioner.
I'm looking at the various options here. And one thing I was thinking about, was our first goal right now is to reach about 70% funding. And I was looking at a chart in the XRL report, and it says if you give about $5 million additional, that puts us at about 69%. And then if you get to that percentage, it said that the contribution rate's about 36%, and right now we're around 41. About how much? So I was thinking if you put the 5 million in to get us to 70% and we stayed around our 40% contribution rate, how much extra contribution does that amount to between the 40 and about the 36% contribution rate?
I'm sorry, who would that be a question to?
I guess whoever has the answer. Because that was one of the things that we had talked about when we were making the policy, is to try to get the contribution rate down. And then if we maintain a consistent contribution rate, like say what we're doing now, which we've already have in our budget from year to year, we would be gaining a little bit because we're making more contribution than we're required to. And then every year, of course, you can take a look to see how we're gaining, if depending on if assumptions are changing or anything like that. So, and I was thinking from the viewpoint of a source, because it looks like you were talking about using the contingency fund, is maybe you could take 2.5 out of the contingency and 2.5 out of fund balance and then see how that goes. You don't necessarily have to make the whole payment at the beginning of the year. You can split it just in case something goes wrong. So that was kind of a thought I had. So I was kind of wondering how much difference the contribution is between a 31 and 36. Is that $1 million? Is that $1.5 million? because that would be additional contributions that we're making that have already been in our budget previously.
Bill, I don't know if you want to tackle that. I think that's something that that we can run the numbers on, Commissioner Mason, $5 million upfront contribution, and then what it would take over time to again hit our policy targets in the future. So I think that's maybe another scenario or whatever that our consultants could run and bring back to you at the next meeting in a week.
Sure.
You know, I think just generally speaking, as I'm looking at this, I'm guessing it's going to be a $5 million upfront would require at least a $2 million ongoing contribution in addition to the 41% that we're currently paying. We certainly would not, the forecasts that we're utilizing don't anticipate us dialing down that percentage. They only anticipate that percentage going up to reach 100% funded status by 2036 and fully amortize that unfunded actuarial liability.
From the viewpoint of the debt issuances for 5 and 6, if we issue debt, is the concept to put all the proceeds into PSPRS or to put it in a trust and make periodic payments? What was the concept if we use debt as far as...
Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, the scenarios that have been run, they're from a strictly financial standpoint, there's no difference or no contemplation between whether we set up an irrevocable trust to house the assets or place them in custody with PSPRS. PSPRS, if we did place them in custody with PSPRS, then obviously that would have the impact of the actuary would say, well, you know, your estimated contribution or your annual required contribution is only supposed to be X amount. It probably would decrease. Probably significantly, especially early on, until we got to see how those assets performed. But if we place them in a trust, then obviously they wouldn't be housed with PSPRS. And then so PSPRS, their actuaries would calculate really the full amount, assuming that we didn't have these assets kind of sitting off to the side in a trust, ready to fund the plan when desired by the council. But from a strictly financial standpoint, those will be options that we'll present to the council on I believe April 7th, those are options that even the BFC, you as a body, could provide some input on. I think we have done some due diligence just in terms of trying to determine whether that was even legal. And I think everything that I'm hearing is we are all clear on the legal aspect of that option, setting up an irrevocable trust. So it's really going to depend on, no pun intended, but the trust of, you know, this irrevocable trust, whether it can outperform the trust or, you know, trusting the plan and their investment advisors and counsel to properly invest our assets and gain a higher yield on them. So.
Well, is there an assumption on who would manage the proceeds if they weren't given to PSPRS in full?
Commissioner Mason, members of the commission, we would, as part of the trust, we would set up a separate trust board who then would be tasked with the management of the assets and the investing of the assets.
Thank you.
Speaking right now, I think that's a particularly bad idea. For one thing, the amount of assets that you'd be managing would be awful small. The cost of managing that money would be too high. You don't have the expertise internally to do it. And I doubt very much whether you're going to grab the expertise on an outside trust board to be able to do that. I think you leave money management to the professionals. If you don't like how PSPRS is running that money, you start grabbing a bunch of people and scream at it and get it cleaned up, because that sounds like what needs to be done anyway. So don't work around that.
Yeah, Commissioner Beasley, members of the commission, I actually have a, just because this was a, you know, the trust option, it is being pursued by the city of Tucson, you know, and I think other local governments are looking at this as an option because of the lack of trust with the PSPRS plan and their investment advisors, their investment team. You know, there's a PFM, which is our, you know, you're well aware that's our, the investment consultants that we utilize at the town. They have a webinar scheduled that I will be participating in about a week or so to kind of find out more, dive into more details as to what this might look like, just to be prepared for that discussion. Professionally speaking, I am about as distrustful as anybody with PSPRS, but I tend to agree with Commissioner Beasley on this issue. I think that it sounds good on its face, but you had better be prepared for the political political ramifications should the trust not perform up to what the plan is yielding on it, on the return on its assets. I mean, if that happens, I think that's a huge issue politically for the town. I think that would look really bad. And, you know, and to be fair, City of Tucson, what they're looking at for these assets is significantly larger in scope and size than what the town would be looking at for these assets. So Commissioner Beasley is absolutely correct.
And to be clear, if we applied the same estimates for growth as we're applying to our policy, their funding level would be significantly lower than 80% in that fund as they've moved up. They have the idea that they've set up a trust and they've solved their problem is wildly optimistic. I hope it happens for them, but they probably still have some significant heavy lifting to do in the next coming years, as well as the work that they've done so far.
I'd like to ask a question that relates to 5 and 6. We've got debt issuance. What happens then to the annual contributions? Is there a way that we can maintain current contribution levels? Because we're being told that the unfunded liability doesn't come close to what we really need.
In those scenarios, we maintain the current the same contributions on the baseline.
Okay, so we really need to pop those contributions to get this unfunded liability to zero.
Correct.
Do you have a good idea as to if we maintain the current contribution levels, the 41 to 46% of payroll, whether that does it?
No, for both those scenarios, the current contribution levels do not get it done. We get to 64% and 73% respectively without making additional contributions.
So the only real benefit, what I'm hearing here, is a pension obligation bond, is to create some structure or discipline on the part of the city to pay something off. And that's because you're converting a theoretically a balance sheet item onto a balance sheet item and then paying it down.
That's effectively what a debt issuance does. That's correct.
You'll need a ton of cash to catch up and then stay there anyways.
Right.
Was there a savings computed from using the debt options versus, you know, some of the first four options? Is there a short-term or long-term savings from the debt service payments versus what we'd have to contribute if we didn't use debt?
The only savings really is the difference in the earnings rate on the proceeds of the debt issuance versus the cost that's paid on the debt. That's your effective savings, that roughly 2% spread.
Yeah, in neither of those scenarios were we able to reduce the contributions and generate any kind of savings.
So what would be the debt service per year about on the $24 million and the $40 million principal? Okay.
Per year on the 20, on the, which one am I on? The 40 is 2.4 million. And I believe the 24 was 1.6.
So is that a consistent debt service payment every year?
Yeah, because we went with a fully amortizing loan. We did straight amortizing, just like your mortgage.
Okay. Thank you.
So I guess another way to look at it would be just to take the 20 years and look at what is the cash flow impact of each of these strategies, right? So if you look at, you know, debt issuance plus your obligatory amount and maybe look at making all, I guess I'm not even counting the first option as an option, but making the bottom five, how do we get to 100% by 2036? Okay, so that may be, I don't know, I mean, five and six, you're going to have to add either additional contributions, you're going to have to do something to additional, right? And then if you lay that out and you look at, you know, your significant contribution, that's an outlay in year one, your 1 million or 1.5 million, whatever it is, right? Every year for the next, you know, 20, however many years, 15 years. And then the debt issuance, you'd have to tack on what your debt service payment is. And you add all those lines, and then you look at what is the cash outlay each year for this time period. And I guess you just take that back to net present value, and which has a better net present value of all those, right? Kind of another data point to look at.
Yes, that's essentially what we'll do in our final analysis. So that'll give you a true apples and apples comparison, purely on a financial basis. You
right.
No cash flow outlay considerations, no political considerations, but
right.
The net present value will give you that pure financial perspective of what represents, from a financial perspective only, the most attractive option.
And then you have to lay on top of that affordability. Well, can you afford a $15 million outlay? Can you afford, you know, each of these, you know, X amount per year? And maybe look at all of that in its entirety to see what kind of makes the most sense, you know, for the town. And I'm liking David's idea about some kind of a combo here. You know, throwing some more scenarios so that you have not getting down to five. Now you have like seven or eight. Because five and six isn't going to work just by itself.
Right, right. Yeah, I think we've talked at least about two other scenarios, which we'll discuss with Dave in terms of how to incorporate those with the others.
Mm-hmm. I did mention earlier that you know, this slide should also include those additional contributions should be yearly, listed as yearly contributions. And I just want to confirm that it also includes maintaining our current ARM rate of 41% and not utilizing savings from that into other operating portions of the budget. Because that's what I'm hearing Tom and others mention. So if that's the case, and we're going to hold that payroll rate the same, and add that in as an additional contribution to additionally hit the principal. You know, we need to make sure that that's listed here as the as how we're getting to that number, so that other people don't think, oh, well, we're going to have, because we're paying this off earlier, our payroll rate is going to go down, so we get to spend that, you know, that extra couple hundred thousand dollars. But if these scenarios include holding that that rate on the ARM, we need to make sure that it's listed here specifically that those funds aren't being freed up for other uses in the budget.
Yeah, we certainly will incorporate that as a given, as an assumption for all the alternatives. And that is the way they were calculated.
So let me jump in here a bit. I'm trying to analyze the chart in front of us. And if I remember right, one of the objectives that we had when first given this prospect of what the contribution should be to be able to accomplish the current policy that the council has put into place, the only two alternatives that accomplish that are 3 and 4. Did I recall that correctly? The others, one?
Two, three, and four.
2, 3, and 4, okay, all right.
Yeah, achieve effectively 100% by 2036 and the 70% requirement.
So 2, 3, and 4 accomplish that. Okay, so would going forward, now just to be fair and consistent, do we have, would that envision that if one of those went forward, that we still have to change the policy to show a 20-year payoff to be able to accomplish that, just like we did with the others? There's a number 5 and 6 were based upon a 20-year term. Of course, they don't get to 100% funded, but.
Right, right. We assumed a 20-year term primarily because that's the typical debt issuance within the Arizona municipalities.
Okay, so if we used 2, 3, or 4 in 16 years from now, 15 years from now, I should say, they all three generate 100% funding.
Correct, within 16 years.
Okay, 16, all right. So that is another advantage to 2, 3, and 4s versus 1, 5, and 6.
That's correct, because for 5 and 6 you have a repayment of debt beyond 16 years for 4 more years.
Right. So if we did a hybrid somewhere in there that's being discussed and thrown around, we'd have to find out where that hybrid fits. And I don't know that it can. I'm not suggesting it can. I don't know. But somewhere where the combinations of 2 through 6 can work to be able to get 100% funding, be able to obtain that policy objective for 2036 being fully funded.
Right, right. It's very possible that a hybrid would be able to accomplish that at the appropriate level.
Right. I believe that that's probably, I mean, this is, I don't want to make this simplistic because I know you got a lot more work to do on this, but, you know, should we give direction tonight, and I'll bring this out to everybody, David, jump in, to have 2, 3, and 4 discussed as potential alternatives, and then a hybrid on top of that as a fourth alternative.
Well, do we think 2 is even an option? And I'll just throw out some thoughts on that. Since we can't direct a future, I feel like 2 is the same as 1 almost, because we cannot direct a future council to make an additional contribution, because that's true. So in essence, you're getting the first year of $2.5 million of additional contribution, but once you've got a new council members or a new council, or even the same council for that matter, if they choose to not continue with the 2.5 million annual contribution, even though it was recommended, they can make that choice. So I sort of feel like what number two does for me is it tells me this is what it's going to take to get to 100%. It is a data point, in my opinion. It is a great data point. If we pay $2.5 million a year for the next 15 years, we're going to get there. But I'm not sure we can recommend that from the perspective that it's the same as number one.
Well, of course, you have that in three and four as well, Kylie.
Yeah, I know. But I feel like, and maybe we need to discuss what's the financial / budgetary feasibility of, you know, a million versus a million and a half versus 2.5 million. I feel like a million is a year is, we could probably very affordably put that in our budget.
Yeah.
I guess I like doing some kind of significant contribution because we can afford it now. I'm feeling comfortable with what I'm hearing Mary and David say, you know, maybe like not the whole amount, but some level of contribution. And you don't know what's going to happen in future years where maybe 2.5 million, they can't figure out how to get there. I don't know. Just some thoughts.
I'd like to see whatever scenarios are run, also run with current market value of assets and real levels of liability. Because we could go through this exercise, do some funding, and still get surprised. I think we should act on a very conservative basis for what the fundamentals are, and then take advantage of an opportunity, whether it's three, whether it's four, or a hybrid, to do it right.
And I guess I would also like to have at least a data point of, you know, obviously we're going to be required to hold that 100% after 2036, because we're going to have to keep it funded because we'll have people that we're going to have to fund those, you know, the pension fund will be writing checks at that point. So I would like to see that there is some, if we're going to err, we're going to err not towards 90%, but at 2036, err to 110% funded, knowing that we can then draw those down throughout the length of the years and the term that the pension fund needs to be funded while those retirees are drawing from it. And I don't think that's again, we're going to have to pay them as they've earned those benefits. And I want to make sure that, you know, again, having a little extra 2036 is not a bad thing, knowing that it just reduces our, you know, the amount of annual additional contributions we'll have to make in 2037 and 2038 and 2039.
I mean, that's one thing we don't have control over, because you never know when the fund can change assumptions. I mean, there's all kinds of things that could happen that are outside our control. But I think once we pick one of these options that gets us close to 100%, because we can be at 100% 1 year and then 95 the next year just because of assumption changes or from our market performance. But at that point, that portion that would apply to the unfunded should be pretty small, and hopefully it would be very doable as far as paying it down to keep it back up to 100%.
Yep.
Now, does Dave or Mary, does the city have any problems with using debt as part of this solution? Or I'm sorry if that's been answered previously, but is the town open to using debt in some form if that turns out to be the recommendation?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Mason, I think that right now we're obviously looking at, and the council has asked us specifically to explore all potential and viable options, and I think debt has to be on the table. and has to be evaluated both for what it can do and also what it can't do. I think that Commissioner Beasley brought up some very key things in terms of managing those funds if they were to go into a trust. I think that there's a, you know, there's a lot to this. And but yes, I think it absolutely should be on the table. I do want to make a couple additional comments. Vice Chair Salverson mentioned that she's got some concerns with number two. I do as well. I think $2.5 million just flat every year is a big stretch and would require a pretty significant cut in services in order to achieve that. And I don't think that's really where this community wants us to be. I think that we need to do something that is a little bit more manageable, that allows us to continue to maintain the great level of services that we have with minimal impacts to the community. The other thing that I do want to mention to Commissioner Beasley is that the contract that we have with CBIZ, they're not actuaries. And so I just want to manage expectations about what it is that they're able to do and what they're not contracted to do under this engagement. And so they're not doing anything that is involving an actuarial analysis. We are using what PSPRS is giving us, and because they're the ones in charge of it, and we have zero control over what assumptions they use or anything. And so spending any time on that, whether we agree with them or not, is not something that that we have the ability to change. And it's also not in the engagement with CBIZ. So if there's something more specific that you think could be reviewed, that would be helpful to see if we can figure out if it's something doable in the with CBIZ as our financial consultant in this matter.
Yeah, thank you, Mary. I understand that. And in the reports, they are clearly smoothing asset levels. And in the report, it states that the actual market value of those assets that are being managed are less than what they're showing in the actuarial assumptions, and they give numbers. The same issue exists in when you take a look at your own footnote, I think it's 15, David, that talks about valuation of the liabilities. So I think there is a comfortable, easy way without doing a lot of analysis, shall we say, or trying to redo actuarial assumptions just to give us a starting point. But that's all I'm suggesting.
And I'm going to let David discuss that with our consultants, because there are some points where this is over my head too. You start talking about actual, I get the big picture, but the nitty gritty is not my bailiwick.
This is a so very complex subject, and very controversial at the same time. So.
Jim, refresh my memory. Is that a material difference? I'm trying to remember the footnote in the CAFRA, but is that a material amount? Because it becomes material.
Several millions on the asset side. And also several millions on the liability side.
Right. Of course, any small difference now becomes many large differences 20 years from now.
It's ballooned, yeah.
Yeah. Where should we go next? Are you looking for any further direction from us?
I'll step in there, Chair. I'll leave that question up to our consultants. Do our consultants feel like they have adequate direction, or is there more direction that, and I'll throw this back towards you as commissioners, is there more direction that the commission feels like it needs to provide or needs to see for our upcoming meeting? Because I think we've gotten at least a couple more scenarios is what I've heard from the commission this evening that they'd like to see for the upcoming meeting. And obviously this upcoming meeting in a week which isn't a lot of time, but this is going to be a big one because I'm hoping that we can kind of settle on a preferred recommended strategy to town council for their consideration, and also hopefully wrap up any sort of changes in the policy that may be necessary moving forward for next fiscal year.
Well, let me just get back to the primary result that we're looking for. We would like a recommendation to go forward from the commission to the council, which would say that if you took these recommendations, it would accomplish achieving your policy at some point in the future, but that policy would call for 100% funded liability. And I guess without being too simplistic, that's kind of what we're looking at. That we want, if that's the case, then the alternatives that we want to continue to look at really come down to, I'm assuming two's being placed out, but you'd be looking at alternative 3, 4, and maybe a new alternative hybrid between 3, 4, and whatever the debt issuance might be. And am I veering off into territory that nobody else is, or I'm trying to bring some structure to this to see where it might go?
Yeah, I agree. I think 5 and 6 just need to have, or whatever the number is going to be. If you're looking at a potential debt issuance, then what else has to, what other contributions have to be made to get you to 100% in 2036, right? It could be a combination of additional contributions and an upfront large significant contribution. So I guess it's kind of what, you know, there's the three pieces, right? There's debt, there's significant contribution, and there's additional contribution. And there's combinations of those three that can get you to 100%. And so in my opinion, we'd be looking at, okay, here's four combinations of these funding sources that get you to 100%. What is palatable to the council, right?
Right. Yeah,
I agree with you, Kathy. I think we need to start with a target of 100%. And then all the scenarios that would be entertained.
Right.
These are the different scenarios, and this is where we get. So what is palatable?
Mm-hmm. Here's how you can get there. And I think once you do, okay, if you do the debt issuance, and if there's a debt issuance and a significant contribution that are you're honed in on, then the additional contribution will probably be manageable for future years. Mm-hmm. Versus, you know, and then we've kind of, we know that we're checking the box in terms of at least starting to significantly chisel away at this number and getting close to the 100% by 2036. If they have some hiccups in some years because it's just not, simply not affordable, they can probably make it up because the number isn't going to be so huge, right? Right now, the number is so huge that I just think you need to do something big to get it lower. Otherwise, you know, to Mary's point, it's not going to happen, 2.5 million a year.
So I know we've, you know, part of what we're going to formulate in the policy next week is going to be choosing from alternatives. The piece that we haven't really had the discussion is about what is the policy goal. And I know we've thrown around 100% as the goal. I'm not convinced 100% is the goal. I've been in the opinion for a while that the number needs to be a little higher than 100% to give us both some cushion and also knowing that this number has to be maintained at 100% at a date past 2036. I think thinking about things like 102 or 104% is very reasonable to know that over time the number, the fund is going to lag in performance as expected, and therefore it will drift back towards 100 or being underfunded. And I think if we're trying to have a one-time solution, and we think that the political time is ripe for people to make a bold decision here. I'd like them to make a full decision that funds it out for a longer window, just for a one time. It's good in 2036, knowing that in 2037, it'll be 2 to 3% underfunded again. But I would like us to at least have that discussion.
To that point, David, and David Gebhardt, is that doable? Can we produce a reasonable expectation of what 102 or 104% would give us for the out years, out being beyond 2036?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members of the commission, I think that is reasonable. We can certainly forecast that out and take a look at what that looks like in the models. We have that information from the plan. So yeah, I think if that's the direction that the commission wants to go, that's certainly something that we can have the consultants take a look at and bring back to you.
Okay. I would certainly support that if we can do it. Again, I don't want to overstep the deliverables that are expected. So I want to be sensitive that you do have a contract. But yeah, I'd be supportive of that. What does everyone else feel? Yeah, I see a lot of nodding of the heads. And so if we can do that, that'd be great, David. That would be very helpful. David Gifford, so. So I guess back to our guests and our presenters, do you feel that you're receiving enough direction from us at this point? Well, of course, David's management and guidance, but.
John, this is Bill Sigenthar. The answer is yes. I have a lot of notes here, which, you know, I'm gonna digest with Tom and you. And probably follow up with Dave on tomorrow to kind of confirm what our next step is. But I believe we have the direction, and we just want to huddle amongst ourselves and with Dave and Mary just to confirm that we're all on the same page in terms of understanding the direction that you've provided. But I think at this point we are clear.
And Bill, if I could address Councilman James, I just see James. I don't have his full name there, but our starting point is coming out of the annual report from June 30 of 2020. That's where we're getting the actuarial value of the liability and the assets. So if Dave can give us more current information, we can adjust or at least take a look at what would change if we change our starting point to that. Yeah.
I think you know what we're talking about, Dave. You and I have had some discussion on this.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Any other questions, comments from the commissioners?
I really appreciate the work that's being done on this, both internally and through our external resources. I think it's really important that the city town get a hold of this issue. And I find it very refreshing that it is now being addressed. We just can't let it get out of control anymore.
Appreciate that. Well, I think the commissioners have concluded their questioning at this point. It was my intent to invite any members of the audience that were in attendance if they wish to speak to this issue or to present any questions that could be taken under consideration. At this time, I'm looking at the participants that we have online, and it does not appear to be anybody in the audience that call upon. And Allison, I'm suspecting you don't have anybody on the phone, but if you do, let me know.
No, I do not, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. So at this time, I'm going to David Gephardt, in the absence of anything else from you, I'll conclude this item and we'll move it to next week's agenda, obviously, and stay with our timeline. And I took a look at the timeline and it appears that we are on pace. We'll come to that for next week in a minute. With that said, I'm going to move to the next item on the agenda, and that is any comments that might come from our council liaison, Council Member Nicholson. I'm not sure he's on the list. He's here. Allison, do we know if council members here?
Not showing that he's present.
Okay, I don't see him either. Okay. And I believe he's not on the phone.
No, Mr. Chair.
Okay, all right. So this was a special meeting. So, okay, we'll move forward past that. Let's move to the next item on the agenda, and that's future agenda items. Does any member of the commission have a future agenda item other than, of course, the one we've got next week? All right, hearing none, we'll proceed. So next item on the agenda is adjournment, but before we do that, I'm gonna ask Mr. Gephardt that next week we have a regular commission meeting that is scheduled for March 16th, and it's at our regular time of 4 p.m. As we look at the agenda for next week at this time, I want to make sure that we're dedicating the time to be able to accomplish our work on the pension. Do you have a sense of what else might be on the agenda next week?
Mr. Chair, I believe we'll probably have a monthly financial update for you as well on the next agenda. Other than that, I don't think there's anything else that I can think of at the moment.
Okay. All right. So if we started at 4 o'clock, our normal time, that should be fine. Then. Okay. That being the case, then for the minutes of the meeting, and as well as for everybody's information, we will be scheduled to have our regular commission meeting next week on March 16th, starting at 4 p.m. I appreciate everybody coming in a little earlier today to be able to work on this. If I could have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, so Commissioner Newell, you moved to adjourn, and I believe Commissioner Mason seconded. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed? None. We are adjourned at 4:48. Thank you very much, everyone. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.